The National Program Reveal takes a look at how Jacksonville is reacting to Donald Trump. Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, Reveal host Al Letson and some other contributors join us to talk about their new show focusing on Jacksonville. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, Going Green Today, we take a look at finding ways to recycle your kitchen grease. Yeah, turning grease into gold. Plus, an incredible event, the Violins of Hope concert at the Symphony. Later in the hour, we'll tell you about that. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Donald Trump just took control of two very different Americas. This week, the national program Reveal travels to Jacksonville, Florida, a very divided city where those Americas converge. We're pleased to welcome on the lineup early this morning out in California, Reveal host Al Letson. Hey, Al, good morning. Okay, I think we're going to have Al in a minute. Also in studio with us, two of the program participants, WJCT reporter Lindsay Kilbride.
Hello.
Hey, and Florida Times Union reporter Ben Konark. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And did you know that Duval County is considered one of the most politically divided cities in these United States? Jacksonville, Florida. We want you to share your thoughts with us about our deep divisions, our political divisions in this country, and how you see them playing out in Jacksonville in the wake of the election of Donald Trump, whether it has to do with taxes and spending or social and cultural issues like the Human Rights Ordinance, for example. The city council just had a big showing of people last night talking about that issue. We want your calls. The number to join us as we work to connect with Reveal host Al Letson is 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. Our own Lindsay Kilbride, let's begin with you. The Reveal show looked at a lot of issues that have divided this community. Mm-hmm. One of them is education. You're our education reporter. And so let's talk a little bit about that piece of this. What did you have to share with Reveal?
Yeah, well, I looked at how people in Jacksonville, whether they were pro-charter school, pro-school choice, or very public school advocates. I looked at all those groups to see, you know, what they predicted Donald Trump would bring to Jacksonville. And it's so interesting because during the campaign, we didn't hear a lot about education. But now that we have Betsy DeVos as education secretary, it's all over Facebook. And people are really talking about, you know, what it could do to public education. And, you know, people are learning about what charter schools are, what the voucher system could do. And we have an example of that in Florida. We already sort of have a voucher system, a tax credit voucher system, so businesses can give money scholarship pot, and then they get tax credits. And the teachers union has been challenging it for years, but it sends low-income kids to school. And I think about 80% of those kids went to a private school, which is one of the issues people are bringing up, that, you know, should public dollars be going to private religious schools.
Deeply divisive issue. Reveal host Al Letson back on the line with us now from California. Hey, Al.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good morning. Thanks for being with us. So why did Reveal decide to focus for a full hour on Duval County?
Well, we were at a meeting one morning just trying to figure out what we were going to do around inauguration time. And one of the data team members pulled up some stats on some of the most divided places in America. And one of the places that they pulled up was Duval. And obviously, since I have a long relationship and history with the city, we figured like that is what made the most sense. So I came back home.
Right. Obviously, a lot of people here know and love Al Letson, longtime resident of Jacksonville, although now you're mainly based in California. Where did you find the division show the most obviously?
You know, I mean, I think that when they told me that that Duval was the most separated place in the United States, I was actually kind of shocked, mostly because I did not. I figured that like Duval would probably go to Trump easily. Um, So, like, I was kind of surprised that such a progressive coalition kind of came out and did well. I think where you see a lot of the division, I mean, obviously I'm not in Jacksonville right now, but just looking at my Facebook feed, the amount of people that came out for the HRO last night, I think that's one of the key places. And so I think what the HRO kind of speaks to is the concept of, well, obviously LGBTQ rights, but also diversity and the direction that the city wants to go in the future. So I think that's a big one. Other places, you know, we teamed up with the Florida Times Union to talk about police and accountability and how people see that. So those were kind of the two major areas that we looked at, along with Lindsay and education and all those other great things.
And we'll go to your calls for Reveal host Al Letson in a moment at 549-2937. Reporter Ben Konark of the Florida Times Union, you're part of this show in particular, as Al said, because of an investigation you've been doing into police-involved shootings in Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's correct.
And what did the investigation find?
Well, the investigation, I think, is still ongoing, and we're planning on doing it for the entire year. But we started off with the question of transparency. We have a sheriff who made that a big part of his platform when he was running for office. So I guess our first kind of article is just focusing on where we are with that promise.
And did you find transparency, did your data show there could be more transparency?
Yeah, so what we found was basically, it's a firewall of sorts, kind of a financial and policy-laden firewall that prevents citizens in the city from really finding out how many police shootings there have been, the details of some of the police shootings. It's all legal, but what the sheriff's office has done has pretty much made it very difficult for an average person to find out kind of what's going on.
And Al Letson, you spoke with a kid named Lee who witnessed a police shooting. This will be part of the Reveal program. Looking at Jacksonville, Florida, let's take a listen.
Lee was playing in the park and watching his little sister when he heard sirens. He ran to find out what was wrong and saw a red Camaro speeding right towards the spot we're standing.
And as the car was coming down, the police came around the corner and hit the car.
The Camaro slammed into a police cruiser. Lee says the police officer got out of his car, unholstered his gun, and pointed it at the driver who was stumbling out.
And started shooting at him. And then Vernell got out the car and started walking. And then that's when the officer shot 5 more times. And then he hit the ground.
The police report counts just 5 shots in all. At that point, Lee knew not to stick around.
My mother always told us, if you hear a gunshot, run.
If you hear a gunshot, run. That's what kids are told in neighborhoods where gun violence is common. Al, how'd you find Lee?
We were just on the corner. We were on the corner where the shooting happened, interviewing a former mentee of mine, Biko. And Biko's from the community, and Lee just happened to be walking by. He was playing at the playground. It's less than a block away. Excuse me. So yeah, we just ran into him. I think the interesting thing about Lee is, nobody from the JSO has talked to him, and other witnesses that we talked to. That saw what happened in the Greene shooting. It's been months now and nobody's talked to him. I think, the one thing that I wanted to stress with this piece, I would say that, Ben, please chime in, but the people that I talked to in Springfield are not, specifically the African-American community, members of the African-American community I talked to in Springfield, are not anti-police. It's not like we don't want police officers here. I think what they're asking for is accountability, which are really two completely different things. I think that it could be... Go ahead, Ben. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a sense in some neighborhoods in Jacksonville that this is an issue that really it happens to... black people more than white people, and they have a very hard time. If they lose a family member, they basically just want to know what evidence points to, and they have a very hard time getting access to that information.
And we'll go to your calls in just a couple more minutes as we speak with Reveal host Al Letson. Lindsay Kilbride, you're part of this hour-long show looking at your work as an education reporter. Let's listen to you interviewing a local mom about her son, Carter, and their thoughts about the public school system.
Julie Delegal has three kids. Her youngest, Carter, is a senior. She's been a PTA president and writes in blogs and local papers in favor of traditional public schools. She says the narrative that charters offer better, more innovative programming is a hollow promise.
Competition doesn't automatically ensure higher quality. What the marketplace is threatening to bring right now in the form of voucher schools is some religious schools teaching that human beings and dinosaurs were hanging out at the same time.
Okay, so that's the traditional defense of public
one
schools.
One of them, yeah.
One
yeah.
of. Mm-hmm. But you also spoke to charter and school choice advocates. They have a very different take.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were playing another clip.
Oh, yeah, and we can listen to that, too. Let's listen to a portion of that interview, too.
If I come back to you in a year, what do you expect, if anything, will have changed as far as charter school operations, law-wise? What would you predict?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I would hope that we will have a more charter-friendly and a more choice-friendly environment, not only at the federal level, but also at the state and local level.
Yeah, so that's Mark Griffin. He is the founder of Wayman Academy. And so his charter is a little bit different than some of the ones that get a lot of the criticism, because he does actually have a nonprofit charter, and his school is almost entirely Title I students, and it's a B school. So it did have C's and D's in the past, but it's really been able to work up and make a good grade. And he is pretty defensive over, you know, he does like the public school system. And I think the issue comes into play when, you know, these big charter companies come into districts, because just so people know, because I sometimes talk about these things, but charter school is a public school, but it's run by, mm-hmm. it's run privately. So the school board has a contract, a charter with the school, and they have no say in, you know, what teachers teach there. They don't have much say in the curriculum, and so they're sort of just a partner in this. So,
sure.
So it's taking the pure pupil dollars that would go to a public school, and it's going to that charter school, even though the school board doesn't have much say over, you know, how that school operates. And so what happens then is if those schools make bad grades, that affects the entire district's grade. And it also, if it does make a bad grade, you know, you're failing students. And so I think the argument is that, you know, there are some really, really good charter schools, and there are some really, really bad charter schools. What people are worried about is with Education Secretary Betsy DeVos coming in, you know, she's really in favor of less and less regulation and kind of letting the marketplace decide if these schools should fail or not. So if parents don't go to the schools, it will fail, and then it's a bad school. Well, in the meantime, kids are going to those schools.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, lots of calls as we speak with Reveal host Al Letson, reporters Lindsay Kilbride and Ben Konark, part of this special upcoming hour looking at the divisions across Duval County, everything from law enforcement to immigration, education, the LGBT community. They're looking at all of this, and they're going to take your calls right now. Let's begin with David on the south side.
Lindsay Kilbride and Ben Konark.
David, okay, David, turn your phone down. Stand by a minute. Let's go to Will in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Will.
Hi, Melissa. This is Wells calling you, just back from D.C. from the massive march that occurred there.
Uh-huh.
Just want to thank all you guys for your hard work on the air, and thank Al for his show here. I think that what this election has done is it's brought people out in Jacksonville who have been silent for a long time, and that silence has made Jacksonville seem to be more right-wing than it really is. I think that, and I know for a fact, people at the beaches are starting to organize. People around the city are organizing. I'm a member of the Jacksonville Progressive Coalition, and people can find us on Facebook. So, I mean, people, you know, if people support women's rights, right of choice and decent health care and Planned Parenthood, they need to come out and begin to organize. If they believe we should have decent wages and clean water, they need to come out and organize. You know, if they believe that the LGBTQ community deserves to have their rights, they need to come out and organize. And if people believe that institutionalized racism exists, as it does, and police killings must stop in the black community, they need to come out and organize. And I think, like I said, there are many people here in Jacksonville who feel that these things must change. And I think you'll see buses left from here for D.C. And St. Augustine and other areas. So I just wanted to lay that out, and I wanted to once again tell people that they can find people who are fighting, who are standing up, and they can find out information on the Jacksonville Progressive Coalition's Facebook page.
All right. Thanks for that call. Al Letson, Revealed chose Jacksonville because you discovered that this community is more evenly divided than you had thought. Donald Trump won Duval County, but not by many votes. And so you said that took you by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Jacksonville. I still consider myself a member of the community there. So after being in Jacksonville for over 30 some odd years, my viewpoint of the city is that it's a pretty conservative place. And because of that strain of conservatism there, like I thought for sure that Duval was going to go for Trump heavily. So I thought, you know, when I saw that it was divided, I think, you know, the interesting thing in my newsroom is that, like, we're here in California, we're way far away from Jacksonville. And I don't think that the newsroom understood that about Jacksonville at first. I think that, you know, when people first, when we were talking about the divide, and I said I was surprised, they were like, well, you're surprised that, like, Trump did so well. I was like, no, I'm surprised that he didn't do better. Because, you know, Jacksonville's an interesting place.
What do you think about that, Van Konark?
About Trump's margin of victory?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for me to say, being kind of a Yankee who's just transplanted down here in recent history. So, you know, my impressions of Jacksonville have been that it's a very diverse place, and I think more diverse than I really understood when I first took the job down here.
All right. Lots of calls as we speak with Reveal host Al Letson and reporters Lindsay Kilbright and Ben Konark about an upcoming hour-long show looking at Jacksonville. Eugene is in Mandarin. Hey, Eugene. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question, and I'll take the comments off the air. I just first wanted to say that I'm from South Florida. I've been in Jacksonville for the past 12 years, but I've been a victim of a crime. And in South Florida, predominantly, I guess, Palm Beach County with the sheriff's office, a lot of the residents who live within that county or that area where my shooting took place elected a local official for sheriff. And I found that here in Jacksonville, there are a lot of residents who vote what's going on, city officials here in Jacksonville, that don't live within the area that they represent or live in St. John's County. So
right.
I just want to say that what's been done to, I guess, change that, because a lot of residents in Jacksonville are saying, I didn't vote for this guy's sheriff, but he's sheriff because people on Atlantic Beach
okay.
voted for him.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Eugene, and that is an issue. But I respectfully, I've got to let you go, just because that's really not the topic we're trying to get into today. But I do appreciate you calling in. Let's go to Margaret on the West Side. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I voted Democrat. I didn't vote for Donald Trump, and I only registered as a Democrat because that's the only way I could vote in the primaries. What I'd like to say is that we all we're putting our head in the sand. Everything is about race, economics, religion, sexuality. And until we acknowledge this and just openly talk to each other, we're going to be facing the same problems that we're facing now. All right, opposition to Donald Trump is his morality and the fact that he, as a president, is not representing, I think, what a democracy represents. That's my opinion. When I debate with people who support him, I don't have the need to insult them or their choice. I just want to have the conversation. So I think once we start having a true and honest conversation with people who are different than we are or have opposing views, I think we'll actually make some progress. But until then, we're just kind of at a standstill. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Margaret. Al, that's really the point of this show, isn't it? To try to get people to listen to each other?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not interested in throwing, you know, verbal bombs at anybody. I think, you know, the work that I've done, not just with Reveal, but also in State of the Union, which was produced at WJCT for a bit, is all about, you know, really trying to start a conversation and to have people really talk to each other. I think so much of the time, you know, we're actually more aligned than we think. And we do have some significant differences, absolutely. But I think when you look at it, like, there's so much more that people have in common. And I actually think that a lot of the separation that happens between people is, you know, the system and the way it's worked out to keep people separated so that we're concentrating on things that, you know, may be important, but not as important maybe as some other things that are going on that our eyes are being taken off of, if that makes sense. So I think that, yeah, I think it's all about a dialogue, beginning a dialogue and getting people to understand each other. I think, you know, in our episode about our story about the LGBTQ rights and the HRO in Jacksonville, you know, I talked to a guy who is really, really does not believe that the LGBT community needs an HRO. But then I also talked to a couple who, you know, got married because they were fearful of what would happen under the Donald Trump administration. And so for me, like, the idea of, like, actually going and sitting down and hearing both sides and really trying to create a conversation with the listener. Like, you know, look, this guy believes this couple's experience is this, you know, and really trying to get the listener to engage in their brain about, like, how it works and where we stand. That's what the episode is all about.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And even with mine, I think people look at these, you know, mine is not as emotional because it's not, you know, about human rights. It's about schools, which is still a very important issue. But, you know, people look at charter schools as one whole, you know, a swath of, you know, they do this or they don't do this. But I think in my piece, you really see why this one school is very important to a community. But then you also see overall what they can do to damage a school district if you know, there's no regulation.
Let's take one more call. Don in Arlington. Hey, Don.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Great show. Great topic.
Thanks.
I'm allowed to dive right in. I mean, I'm born and raised here in Jacksonville, Florida, and I actually think that, you know, I get around town. I contact with a lot of different people. You know, as far as relationships in town, I think things are better, and they have the opportunity, you know, to get even better than they are. And, you know, we have different opinions, you know, Democrats, Republicans, but we seem to know how to get past those things to keep things going here in town. I'm allowed to continue on about something different. Is I was off the charter school, if I'm allowed to speak on that behalf, am I allowed to continue on that, my thoughts? With the charter school?
Yeah, go ahead quickly.
My family, my children, attended a charter school in our area, and one of our children who were really into our studies had the opportunity to graduate at 15 years old. And
what school was that?
River City Academy.
River City Science Academy, you mean? Academy. Sure. Okay. So yeah. You're a fan of that school?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Don. Yeah, and we're running a little tight on time, so I hate to cut you off, but there's a caller who he had a positive experience with his child's charter school, Al Letson. So people can catch the show. It's going to be airing. Is it this weekend?
Yeah. We are putting the finishing touches on it now, and it'll be out to stations across the country this weekend.
All right, and this will air nationwide and feature our own reporter Lindsay Kilbride and the Florida Times Union's Ben Konark. Thanks, both of you, for being in studio with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
And thanks, Al Letson, for getting up early to talk to us.
Way early, but I love you.
Yeah, 3-hour time difference, so we appreciate it. And again, make sure to listen to Reveal this weekend as the show looks at Duval County. Much more still ahead later, the Symphony, a very special event coming up. We'll tell you about the Violins of Hope concert. But up next is Going Green on today's show, looking at turning Greece into gold. Back in a moment.
Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. On the next 1A, Made in America. President Donald Trump dropped the Trans-Pacific Partnership on his first full day in office. Even some of his opponents, including Senator Bernie Sanders, supported killing that trade deal. The president says creating manufacturing jobs is a priority. What should America make, and what will it take to make it?
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Samora Penderhughes has a message.
I'm not trying to just sit at my piano and write music. I'm trying to say, how can I be most of use?
Next time on Jazz Night in America, the young composer, pianist, activist takes his transformation suite to his hometown of Berkeley, California. It's music, poetry, and a call to action. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, a local company has been doing something quite amazing for a very long time, trapping and disposing of grease, like the kind maybe in a skillet you fried up some bacon in, okay? What they've figured out how to do is turn grease into a commodity, biodiesel fuel. Tom McLaughlin, the owner of Metro Rooter here in Jacksonville, is here with more about how he turns grease into gold. It's today's Going Green. Hey, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning.
And this seems like such an obvious thing because this grease can be transformed into something that is actually fuel. But most of the time, people just pour it down the drain, I guess, which is the absolute worst thing you can do.
Yeah, well, most people have got a better sense than to pour it down the drain because they're going to be inundated with blockages and that sort of
right.
thing.
Right, but maybe they throw it out some other way?
Yeah, there's other forms of disposal. Some people like freeze it and then just put it in the trash, or they put it into a container. And there's more and more recycling efforts that are taking place here and elsewhere that you can take the used grease and cooking oil and mm-hmm. recycle it into feedstock for biodiesel.
And how does Metro Rooter go about that?
We essentially take the grease trap waste and also the used cooking oil, and we simply clean it up and separate it from the other waste that's in the grease trap. And we'll isolate it, and then we sell it to others who further render it into the biodiesel.
So this is helpful to the environment in a lot of ways. Grease trap waste, mainly it's restaurants that produce the most of it. But if it does go into pipes and pumps, that causes damage. It's bad for wastewater treatment, bad for dumping on the ground. So not only are you're capturing this material, but you're repurposing it. It's the ultimate kind of green sort of process, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the real value in this, in what we're doing, is the keeping the grease out of the collection system, the sewer pipes, and the pumps, and it retards the operation of the sewer treatment plant significantly.
Yeah.
So there's always been major efforts to keep it out of the sewage treatment facilities, thus the grease traps at the restaurants, and an even more inspired effort nowadays for residential users to do other things with grease than allow it to go down the drain.
Are your biggest customers restaurants, or can a residential customer come to you with their grease?
Well, in cooperation with the JEA, there are collection stations out at several of the fire stations. We have bins out there for the general public to deposit their used cooking oil and grease.
What do they look like? Is it obvious?
They're blue bins.
Okay.
They have a JEA logo on the front of it. I think our name is also on there. We service them. So we collect it then. Business picks up during the holidays when people are frying turkeys and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I bet.
And then it'll slow down at other times. But I think more and more, as people become aware of where they're at, they'll use them more. We have a collection station at our office too on Normandy, and I see people out there making deposits, and I'll go and talk to them, and they'll give me a lot of thanks for having that out there, because essentially people, for the most part, more not so much nowadays, they just don't know what to do with it.
And, right. And this gives them a solution.
Yeah, and it's a very positive solution, because it really helps a lot. And like I said, the real value is keeping the grease out of the sewer plants and the pipes and that sort of thing. As you know, it just clogs up everything.
Biodiesel fuel is it's one of a whole portfolio of alternative fuels. Not the biggest one in the American energy portfolio, but it's growing.
It's getting bigger.
Yeah, it's getting. This is one way to contribute to that.
Right. Well, it's becoming more and more perfected.
Yeah. Well, this is so fascinating. So again, people need to contact you, Tom McLaughlin, the owner of Metro Rooter, or drop their grease and cooking oil off at the bins you'll see around town at JFRD locations. That's probably the easiest way.
Yeah, you can go on the JEA on the internet, on their internet site. It's like JEA/grease. But there's a map with the balloons that'll show you the different locations.
Excellent. He's Tom McLaughlin, owner and CEO of Jacksonville's own Metro Rooter. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And much more still to come. We'll be right back.
This Going Green segment is brought to you by the Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville.
An unfavorable comment or tweet from the president can do damage in corporate America.
Tweet risk is really is a good word for it. These are the curveballs. No trader can afford to ignore them.
I'm Kai Rizdal, using tech to trade on what Trump tweets. That story, the rest of the day's business news, and the numbers from Wall Street as well next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
Welcome back. Well, we just had an election in this country. It might have inspired some of you to run for office yourself. Leadership Jacksonville wants to help with that. The organization's nonpartisan political campaign seminar is an intensive 5-session course giving you practical knowledge if you're considering entering the political arena. Jill Langford Dame is president and CEO of Leadership Jacksonville. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is sort of boot camp for people, I guess, that are thinking about running for office.
It is. We want to give them not only the skills and some of the things they need to think about, but we also want to encourage them to understand before they get in what it's going to take to be an elected official, especially the role of ethics in what they're doing.
You look at ethics, voter targeting and research, media relations, how to build the right campaign team, fundraising, probably the most or one of the most important parts of being successful. So this is a 5-week class that people can take.
Right. 3 hours each time for 5 weeks, always on Friday mornings.
And this is nonpartisan, we need to stress.
Very much nonpartisan. We just want good elected officials from either party and from all walks of life. So we're looking for a very diverse class with people that might be running for city council, might be running for school board, might be looking at all sorts of local offices.
Have people gone through this seminar and then gone on to get elected that you could point to?
This is our first time to do it.
This is the first time.
This is the first time. A number of years ago, the Chamber of Commerce did a similar program, and they have stopped doing that, and we're seeing that there's a void.
I see. Because so many people consider it, but they think, oh, that seems so overwhelming. I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Right. And we're hoping this is where they begin, that they get the knowledge and the understanding and then really make the decision. Yes, this is something I can do. And they go for it.
Right. Because so often, particularly in the down ballot races, you see a lot of races where somebody runs and they're running unopposed. There's nobody challenging them.
Right. And that's a shame.
You'd like to change that.
Yes. Yes. We'd love to see full slates in every election.
So what else do people need to know to be part of the political seminar with Leadership Jackson?
Well, our applications are online on our website, leadershipjacks.org. They're open through January 31. We're hoping for a nice size, 10 to 20 folks, so they get to know each other too, and really get a chance to ask questions of the experts, because we're not the experts. We are bringing in the people that have run campaigns, that have run themselves, to talk about their experiences and what they need to share for others to know. So we want people to register online. We hope we have to turn folks away and would like to do it again. This is the first of what we hope will be many opportunities.
Okay. And also it bears repeating that Leadership Jacksonville graduates a class every year. I was lucky enough to go through it and graduate in 2013, the best class that's ever been. No, I know every class says that to you, Jill. But Leadership Jacks is a training ground for future community leaders who come from all walks of life.
Exactly. And what we know they've mostly done is they've mostly gotten involved in a huge way in the nonprofit sector. But many don't stop there. Many do go on and run for political office. And as you said, we want to make it clear to folks that they can do it. They can step forward and run for elected office.
But again, if you're just sort of casually listening to this, the Leadership Jacksonville's political campaign seminar, it is nonpartisan. The deadline is coming up soon.
Right, January 31. And folks need to get online and apply. If we're looking at a group that's not as diverse as we would like, we might extend that deadline, but there's no guarantee that will happen. So they need to go online and apply for the class.
Apply now. She's Jill Langford Dame, president and CEO of Leadership Jacksonville. That website, leadershipjacks.org.
Right.
And in a moment, a look ahead to Violins of Hope. We'll tell you about that right after this.
Hello, I'm Stan Cleland, Vice President of Communications for WJCT Public Broadcasting. Now's the time we look ahead to the promises of a new year. Here at WJCT, January is a very exciting time, as many of your favorite dramas return with new seasons. Sherlock is back, Mercy Street returns for another exciting season, and the eagerly anticipated masterpiece series, Victoria, debuts this month. These are some of the programs, our non-pledge shows, that make up the iconic content WJCT offers each day. This is the content you value so much, but these programs are expensive and are made possible largely through funding from people like you. Your support makes it possible for WJCT to continue to share your community, your world, your dramas. Make a donation today at WJCT.org. Thank you and Happy New Year.
Presenting Next Avenue, a website from WJCT created specifically for adults discovering life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue.
Sponsored in part by AARP. Real possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, on Sunday, the Jacksonville Symphony will present Violins of Hope, a powerful concert featuring 16 violins recovered and restored from the Holocaust. This is a special event presented in collaboration with the Anne Frank A History for Today exhibit at the MOSH, the Museum of Science and History. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Amnon Weinstein. He is one of the most respected violin makers in the world. And he's played a central role in this incredible story. He joins us now in studio. Mr. Weinstein, a pleasure. Good morning.
Thank you very much.
It's so good to have you on the show. And we'll talk in a little bit about the concert, but first, your story is absolutely riveting. You became determined to reclaim this lost heritage of incredible violinists these were violins played by Jewish musicians during the Holocaust. Can you take us back to where you first learned of this and it started you on your quest to find and restore these violins?
You know, in Israel, everybody is touching the Holocaust. My family, we lost about 400 people. Other family, it's 100 or 50 or none. Mm-hmm. And you cannot escape from that.
Right.
In my profession, there have been a lot of people who played the violin in Europe. Most of them survived because the Nazi used them to do the orchestras, to cheat the Jewish people. Because, you know, when a train came to Auschwitz or Birkenau, people were thrown out from the trains, but they've seen a violinist playing a violin. So they said, if there is a violin here, nothing can happen. But the next step was the gas chamber. Mm-hmm. And the Nazi needed these people, so there are many survivors. And I'm trying to get each instrument that have a touch to the Holocaust, restore them, bringing them to perfect condition, and we are doing concert like it's going to be here in Jacksonville.
That's right. The concert on Sunday will be performed with the violins that you have painstakingly restored, a couple dozen of them. What was the process like to track down these instruments and find them and then bring them back to glory so they could be played?
First of all, it's detective work. You have to find. Then many people approach me, now especially, because we began the history with four violins, and today we are 64, so that's a quantity.
64?
64 today, and tomorrow I hope I will have 66. You know, it's growing up all the time, like a snowball. First concert that we had in Paris, there were four violins. Now I can give violins to two orchestras. And this is very important because people, when they are coming to concert, they have a little bit easier to understand the Holocaust.
Yeah.
This is so horrible issue. but the music is making it a little bit softer, we can call, and then it's easier to come and to repeat never again. Because the most important thing is educational part, that here in Jacksonville, I have forgotten how many schools we are doing it. It's a list of 3 schools a day, yeah? It's not a joke. My son is doing it with all these students and going back with about 12 instruments and people that are playing on it. And we have done in Cleveland, for example, an educational program for 12,000 students.
And that's incredible.
And the teachers, they wrote one remark. You could hear a needle falling on the floor.
Pretty difficult with kids to do that.
That's exactly yeah. the answer.
And you mentioned a minute ago, when people would come into the camps, they would see people playing violins, and that would temporarily reassure them. So the Nazis exploited the talent of the musicians as a form of mind control, basically, right?
Completely.
And so the violin is such a symbol in so many ways of the concentration camps.
The violin is, first of all, a symbol of the Jewish people.
Yeah.
Then of the concentration camps, because everywhere they've had orchestras, in the ghetto, in the camps, in Auschwitz alone, there have been 8 different orchestras. The men orchestra besides the Arbat Mayfrei, women orchestra of Alma Rose, which was very, very famous, Dorf Orchestra of Mr. Mengele, and we have the instrument from this, not I, the Yad Vashem, and some other places have had orchestra all the time to show people that the camp is not so bad. There's music there.
Yeah, it was propaganda. Now, you said it took detective work to find the violins. What all did that even entail? I can't even imagine. Were they recovered from survivors who had survived their time in the camps? Were they left behind in some of the camps? How did you find them?
Very complicated and with a lot of differences issue, because most of the survivors didn't want to see the violin again, because playing the violin, they've seen horrible things. And they decided to put it away. When they passed away and the children found a violin inside the house, they didn't have an idea what it is. Such a point. Now, some other violins, the family knew about what the father or the mother did in the time. When time came, they came over to me if I want the violin to the collection. And there are many instruments with a full story that I know. Uh-huh. Even with the picture of the people, yeah? Here, for example, in the case, is one violin from Auschwitz, from the orchestra.
You've brought this violin with you today. Could you open up the case?
Yes.
And we'll post this video later today at wjctnews.org. So this violin you brought with you today was played at Auschwitz.
These two violins?
Two violins.
They will be in the concert. This violin was in the men orchestra in Auschwitz. The players survived completely. In the end of the war, there have been a lot of Israeli people to help the survivors. And then one named Davidovich, the guy, the owner of this violin, came to him and said, I have nothing to eat. Please buy the violin from me. And he gave him about $50, which is 5 times more than the value of the violin, because he thought maybe he's child will continue and we will study. And not, when he heard about the project, he gave me the violin, we restore it, we clean it, and now it's looking wonderful.
You've restored it beautifully. Yeah, it looks
and
gorgeous.
And it is a concert violin. In Berliner Orchestra, there was a concert now in the 27th of January, and this violin was for the solist.
You are, in fact, one of the most respected violin makers in the world. So your talents have been put to an incredible use here with the Violins of Hope.
You know, I think that this violin, they have one mission, to speak, meaning to play and to tell the stories. And there are stories. You can imagine that the man who played a violin in this orchestra, what he has seen, it's unbelievable. That's why he wanted to sell the violin. And I know many people like that. Many people, after the war, the first thing that they have done, they sold the instrument. And 1 year later on, They came back to my music.
Oh.
Not all of them, some of them.
It is such a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you so much for being here with us as Jacksonville commemorates not only this concert Violins of Hope, but we also encourage people to go and see the Anne Frank exhibit, Anne Frank, A History for Today, at the Museum of Science and History. You can learn more about everything happening around town at the website annefrankjacks.com. Meanwhile, Violins of Hope, that concert will be Saturday at the Jacksonville Symphony, tickets at jackssymphony.org. And he is the restorer of these violins. Mr. Amnon Weinstein traveled here from Israel. And so we so appreciate you being on the show, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That's our show for today. Thanks so much for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Our podcast is up every day on iTunes and through the WJCT app. And coming up next, President-elect Trump says he will bring jobs back to this country, in particular, manufacturing jobs. A look at what should be made in America. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.